Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
If you've ever heard the expression, see how the sausage gets made.
Well then, this is a delicious episode. Okay, Patrick, I know we have not been able to get out of the house in the last two and a half months. But there was a time when we could go places and do things, right?
Yes, absolutely. I sort of remember that. Yeah.
I vaguely remember that. And so anyway, the lockdown has been good in one regard, which is that I have finally gotten a project done that has taken me many, many months to get to and get done. And let me explain that here in a second. Let me introduce us on the show. The show is called Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
You may be new to the show because this is kind of a different thing we're doing here, and maybe somebody's passed this on. So we're just a couple of guys sitting in our basements in Northern Virginia, the suburbs of Washington, D.C., and we talk about music. We've been doing this for quite some time. We have many, many episodes, and it's kind of new, old, whatever interests us. Sometimes we do interviews. Well, many months ago, it's been several months now, I don't want to get into the details, but we took a tour of a record pressing plant in Northern Virginia.
Yeah, it was amazing. And something we've been trying to do even, going back months and months before we even actually got it done, because those folks are so busy over there. And you know, we were obviously trying to do a show every day. It took us a while to get it together. But once we did, it was really great. It was a really, really cool event. And I think, like you and I talked about, Jim, even when you go through the process of this, as you'll hear, it's incredibly complex. Like, you think it wouldn't be, right, but it really is.
So we met up with this guy, Eric Astor, and he is the president and CEO of Furnace Record Pressing in Alexandria, Virginia. And they recently put a big investment in essentially a new record pressing operation. Now, they've been in business for some time. They used to be manufacturing CDs, and they had invested in a vinyl record production in Germany, what have you. But anyway, they recently did a lot of investment in ramping up vinyl record production here in the U.S. in Northern Virginia. And they are putting out a lot of product. There's a lot of demand for it these days. And so anyway, we thought it'd be fun to go and see how this process works. Now, here's what my apologies why we sat on this for so long is because what I learned in doing this is that editing an interview that's done as like a tour being something where that is normally very visual, right? So in editing that into something that hopefully makes sense to an audio listener, it ended up being way more time consuming than I ever would have thought. And so I kind of chip away at it here and there, now and then, and what have you. But because I'm home a lot more now, I finally had time to like really sit down and buckle down and get this done. So you were going to hear that now. I hope it makes sense to people. I think you can follow it pretty well. The one thing I will tell you is that we were on the tour and we still don't totally understand it either. Don't worry about it too much. Just enjoy hearing somebody speak with a passion about making records. I think that's what's really fun about it, right?
Yeah, totally. That is the underwriting theme here is somebody who's doing it for a labor of love, but also figured out a way to make a successful business out of it. So that's something to be applauded on many levels. But and also to take the time and take us through it step by step was really great.
Yes, and I think you will probably hear me say this a couple of times over the next couple of days. We're going to be running this these shows about Furnace. I'm so amazed at the amount of work that goes into taking a piece of music. I mean, we don't even examine in this the recording process, but that is a fairly complex endeavor as well. So taking somebody's idea, somebody's music in their head, that they can get it from there to you on a vinyl platter takes so many steps and so many people to do that, that we should really appreciate it a lot even more than we do, yeah. I think, right?
That's right. It's a real craft and a real art that's been passed down for years and refined. And the amount of people it takes just to keep that place running is really unbelievable.
It's cool. So, okay. Please enjoy this tour of Furnace Record Pressing with Eric Astor. And then on tomorrow's episode, we did a little sit-down interview with Eric, and that's where we talk with him more about sort of his background and how he got into this, yeah, and all that.
Right.
This is specifically walking through the pressing plant. All right?
Yep.
Here we go. Take a journey with us now.
All right. Well, welcome to Furnace.
Thank you for doing this, man. We really appreciate it.
Come on by. So we're going to go through the, we'll kind of start where everything starts, where we receive printed materials, and it's kind of where everything kind of comes in and leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start with the boring warehousing part, but very important.
Right.
This is just literally where printed matter is stored until we do the assembly and packaging. So there's no vinyl in here. It's just jackets, inserts, download cards, marketing stickers. So, you know, normally what we do is, you know, product comes in, it goes right out, except for projects that we're doing, that's always in production. So, you know, you'll see Foo Fighters and, you know, Fleetwood Mac, Neil Young, Led Zeppelin,
mm-hmm.
Things that are on and off the press all the time.
Right.
So, and then there's newer stuff like the Galactic, which is my favorite record of the year, probably the last 2 years.
Is it really?
I fucking love that record.
Wow, I haven't heard that.
10 years, 15
already
years
ready?
Ago, that record would be like number one on the charts because it's like every song's a hit. It's so good.
Wow.
But I go down to New Orleans a lot and they're like the house band for, like, now they actually bought Tipitina's, but they're always playing out. They're awesome, but that record's f***ing great.
Wow. There's a tip for our listeners right there.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Does it make the job better when you can press great records?
Yeah, you know, we used to make CDs almost exclusively, and, man, it was a lot of bad music, and, you know, including, you know, probably music that I played. But with vinyl, you know, there's, I don't know, you know, there's it takes a lot more to, you know, it requires someone to kind of try a little harder and, you know, be a little further down the road. So the music tends to be a little, you know, more fleshed out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a lot of great stuff, a lot of stuff that I normally wouldn't listen to that I discover just because,
interesting,
you know, we're throwing test pressings on and we kind of focus on the quality of vinyl. I mean, there's a big difference between, you know, records that we press and that Quality Record Pressing or RTI out in California versus some other plants, you know, it costs more to make them, you know, it takes longer. So, you really hear the difference, but, I'm listening to records all the time, making sure that they sound good. So you'll see that there's just a lot of stuff that, you know, is either ready to go on the presses or go into assembly, or, you know, stuff like, you know, like I said, Black Keys and other things, that Nine Inch Nails, stuff that we press a lot. So we have four loading docks down there. So we, you know, bring product in, and that's where everything goes back out to.
Now, for a new release, Eric, will typically the art be done beforehand? And you'll have it sitting around waiting to press it?
No, actually, it's always the opposite.
It's always the opposite.
You know, we're trying to, hey, get us label art. You know, we can't press a record until we actually have the labels. So, you know, we're always playing catch up. I mean, there's very few times that we actually get something that's like ready to go.
Right.
It always comes in stages. So usually it takes like two and a half to three weeks to do a test pressing. So, mm-hmm. you know, we'll get the audio, we'll cut it onto lacquer, we'll do all the plating, and then we'll send the test pressings out. And then, you know, when those get approved is when we, you know, like to get started.
Right.
So, So yeah, it's we're usually getting the graphics towards the end of the test pressing process.
Okay, right.
And then hopefully we have that stuff ready to go. We get labels printed. And then by the time that we have the vinyl scheduled to press, we're ready to do everything.
Makes sense.
But you see these white pipes that come in from the parking lot?
Yeah.
So that's out there. We have a chiller. So the chiller basically brings cold water into this room. And it's part of the pressing process. Like after the steam cycle, you need to cool. And so you have the 45 degree water that mixes with the water that's coming back from the presses. And they mix at about 70 degrees and then they go back into the pressing room. So this is a closed loop. So we have a set of huge pumps that are pumping product water in from the chiller. And then we've got two pumps that are pumping water back into the pressing room. Watch your step. This was all laid out originally, and then the engineering firm that we used totally fucked up everything, and we had to retrofit this whole thing.
Oh, is
so,
that right?
As you can see...
Not quite the space you might have wanted to walk by, yeah.
So if I didn't have a non-disparagement clause, I'd tell you who it is. So this is the boiler. I'm glad we're doing a tour now because this is like the loudest room in the whole place.
Sure, I bet, yeah.
So what this does is it heats up water. There's very little water inside of the boiler, and it creates steam, and it throws it up into these steam headers here. And then that steam gets put out into the presses. This will run about 16 presses.
This is amazing to me, and it's so impressive. And I just want to point out that you're doing this at a time when people can just, with a few clicks, get their music out to the world.
Yeah, but how not sexy is that?
I know.
Believe me.
It's too convenient.
I know, man.
Yeah.
But look at all of this that goes into this. I don't think it's any
kind of
idea,
incredible.
Right?
No, exactly. Yeah.
I always, like, the people that complain about the cost of vinyl, like, I just want them to, everyone that takes a tour, they're like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's, you know, I don't expect anyone to know, like, what it takes to press a record, but... It's a lot. And, you know, to press a really good record, you know, we spend a lot of money on people, you know, and that's, anyone can go out and buy a press and, you know, be stupid enough to build this infrastructure. But, but it's really all about the people. So you really need the guy that runs this room, you know, he's been working on, you know, Navy ships, you know, running like a, you know, the boiler inside of different ships, and then he ran the show over at National Airport. So, you know, a lot of experience. And then our main press operator or press mechanic has been pressing records for 45 years. So this is the press room. So we have 14 presses, of which we've got 10 up, and we've got 4 more to put into service. So we have currently we have 6 of these old Tulex Alpha machines, which are really the best presses in the world, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
These were made in the 70s. We got these out of Mexico City, and we sent them to England, of all places, to have them refurbished. And wow. Now they're back here. But these things just work.
And it sounds like, from what I've gathered in my research, going down there to get those presses out of Mexico was quite an interesting experience for
it
you,
was.
Right?
Yeah, actually, the gentleman that we bought them from was just here last week.
Is that right?
Yeah, his name's Marco, and he was here to come and visit his babies. But
to make sure they're still in good operation.
Yeah, so we had a couple of our guys go down to Mexico and load them into onto a flatbed. And it's funny because, like, they didn't have like, forklifts. You know, they had to figure out, like, yeah, it's crazy
how to lift these up.
Yeah, and then it was like
damaging them.
Really small little streets in Mexico City, and they were in like a storage shed.
Wow,
it's crazy. That's a story for another time.
That's a podcast.
And they somehow got here okay.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, these look super intricate. Like this is. This stuff that looks like one thing gets messed up, it's going to ruin the whole thing, right?
Well, yeah, so these originally they ran off of these old, static controls. And so we've, we, uh, we built PLC controls. We had a gentleman in England kind of screw everything up. So we actually hired a gentleman out of college who did his master's thesis on different record production techniques.
Really? Yeah. Wow.
Theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's like he's pretty f-ing smart. So we had him actually design a brand new PLC. So he's basically taken this whole thing and you know, they had to redo a lot of the electrical, a lot of the programming, had to redo all the programming, add a bunch of new cards and stuff like that. So he's got this whole ballet working now. So basically it starts here with the extruder. The extruder is basically it's a barrel that has a screw similar to this inside.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is it takes the granulates of PVC that look like little pieces of like lentil beans, and it starts, and there's three heating chambers, and as it goes up, it heats in different different temperatures as it goes up. And the screw, they're all shaped a specific way, so it pushes the plastic up and creates a biscuit or a puck. Looks literally like a hockey puck. And so that plastic gets pushed into this little cup, and then there's a pusher arm that pushes the puck into the middle of the, the middle. So yeah, so basically there's a mold on the top and the bottom, and that's what carries the stamper. And the stamper has the grooves, or has the ridges that presses into the record and makes grooves. So what you do is you secure a stamper on the top and the bottom, and then you have a label arm that brings the labels in, that pushes the PVC into the middle, and then you've got 100, 150 tons of pressure. You've got that steam cycle that comes through, and then you have the cold water that comes through, and then it opens it back up and pushes it over to the trimming plate here. And that's where you trim off the edges, the flash. And then once that's done, it gets stuck or gets stacked onto the spindle.
Right.
And then you put cooling plates every five records or so to keep the pressure on there and keep them flat.
And the magic is in those plates that are on the top or the bottom that stamps A side and B side.
Well,
is that what
there's a lot
the
of magic.
Pressing?
There's magic in the PVC, there's magic in the program, like how much heating and cooling, and then there's some other magical, like special things that we do in terms of the way that we ramp it up and, you know, other things. There's a way that you actually put the stamper on the mold. The PVC is a huge part of it, and also the mixture of the virgin and the regrind material. Add a little bit of stabilization there to create your special sauce.
So everything's got to be
everything.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, there's specialty in the pad that's on the trimming table because there's suction on it. So you have to do a lot of things right in order to make sure that you're not warping, you're not cutting it improperly. If the blade's not specially, you know, designed and sharp, then as it's cutting, it's not quite, you know, cooled or cured yet. So if you're you know, sometimes you can actually throw it out of center by trimming it.
Oh, that would make sense. Yeah.
And you said these presses are from the 70s?
Yeah.
Is that right? So how much life do they have left in them?
Oh, I mean, they'll run forever.
Yeah?
I mean, these went out of commission in 92, and I think they bought them in the late 70s, early 80s. So, you know, these only have probably 10, 12 years on them. As long as you know how to maintain them,
right.
and you know, at this point, you know, through all of the different suppliers, we've got people that can make every spare part on this thing.
That's amazing.
So, you know, just through necessity, you go, okay, well, you take a good one, you send it to a machine shop, and nowadays you can 3D scan it. They can, you know, put it into a mill quickly and you know,
make
you've got parts.
Yeah.
So,
Eric, what, for the layman, you know, how did 180 gram vinyl evolve? And is that something that makes a big difference to an audiophile or to the average person who's buying vinyl?
To the average person, probably not.
Yeah.
You know, but there is some validity in it, right? So 180 gram is a lot easier to keep those flat. It's harder to press a 140 gram record.
And you feel that in the weight, right? Yeah. Versus, yeah, totally.
But also when you're playing, so the grooves are the exact same, whether you press it at 100 grams or you press it at 180 grams, the groove depth is the same. So there's no difference there. But if you put a heavier record on your turntable platter, mm-hmm. it's actually going to stabilize better.
Yep.
I mean, you can also put a weight on it. Put a ring on it. You can do some other things to stabilize.
Put a penny on your tone arm back in the old days.
Yeah, don't do that nowadays. But so there is some validity to that. Also I just think that there's something to just having a heavier, substantial record. So if you're going to spend $40 or $50 on a record, which sometimes some of these, you know, small run, like, you know, where they go and they spend $5,000 on the mastering,
yeah.
you know, a bunch of money on the packaging, you know, you're not going to want a flimsy piece of shit, you know, press it on 180 gram, 200 gram, you know, it's just a little bit more substantial.
So one press will do what kind of volume during
so
a shift?
So if you're clipping along, you in an 8-hour shift, you can get 1,000 records off of a machine. But that's usually if you don't have any changeovers. And then, so let me show you the semis. These are the ones that make the really cool records. You have an extruder. So this extruder is basically how you make the puck.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to, you know, create a special puck, you can have two extruders running two different, you know, colors. And then you cut them in half. You can put half and half.
Yeah,
you can have, we're building these little steam cups that will actually, you know, throw a little bit of steam into a metal cup and heat up some plastic. So then you can like dip it in like sprinkles on a donut.
Wow, that's
put
wild.
That in. That's how you get your splatters.
Yeah.
You can kind of take a little bit of PVC and put it in and create like, you know, colors and all kinds of different effects.
It seems like there's a big demand for colored vinyl these days, right? Because people, I guess they feel like if they're spending the money on a physical product, they really want to get something.
Well, color actually sounds worse than black. So it's more of the collectible nature.
I've often wondered about that.
Yeah. So you'll see that the PVC guys, they'll spend a lot of money and time formulating, you know, a single color. And so, for instance, we use a plastic out of the Netherlands from a company called PAT, and they've been making this compound for a long time, and it was developed like years and years ago by a guy named David Carr, who was pressing records in England
mm-hmm.
on the 2X Alpha machine. So mm-hmm. it was actually developed specifically for the 2X mm-hmm. Alpha machines. So they have a specific hardness and all this other stuff. Compound 024, and then they make all these other colors based on that, but they have to put in, you know, different dyes and pigments to make these different colors.
Right.
So you're going to get some impurities. Sometimes they sound fantastic. Sometimes you'll hear a little bit of, you know, some ticks and some noise, higher noise floor.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the people that are collecting records, you know, they don't, or, you know, if you have a $300 turntable, you don't care as much, you know.
Right.
If you have a $3,000 turntable and you're actually listening and you got some good speakers and stuff,
right.
you probably want the black
right.
vinyl.
Right. Or you might be able to afford the color just to have in your collection anyway, right?
But there's a collectability to that
sure.
too. So, I mean, I've got different colors of a bunch of records and, you know, someday I'll trade them or sell them or something like that. But,
exactly.
you know, for the most part, if you're playing a record and you just want it for sound quality, buy the black.
Right.
I just want to say to our listeners, we are looking at a stack of bags of vinyl pellets, and the label says premium record vinyl.
That's pretty good.
Right on it. Not the kind of thing you can just go get at the Home Depot.
No,
right?
not at all.
This is not PVC pipes just ground up.
Yeah.
Although this company actually makes PVC pipes.
Oh, do they really?
Vinyl flooring, like anything out of PVC. This is maybe, I think, 10% of their business. And they make the least amount of margin, but it's kind of like their passion.
Wow, so, that's right. interesting.
But they make anything out of PVC.
This is where it starts, right here with these
pellets.
Pretty
cool.
So we use the stuff out of Europe because it doesn't have lead in it. So most of the plants they use a different plastic out of Asia that has lead as a stabilizer, so this has tin. And pretty soon we're going to be moving to another compound, the same company that makes it out of a food grade stabilizer. So we're just trying to, you know, use greener and greener material as we can. But so I'll show you, this is what a stamper looks like.
Okay.
And I'll show you we have a poster up but this is a pure nickel.
Oh, wow.
So this is what goes on the mold mm-hmm. and presses the record. So this is a negative. And when you press that into the record, it creates a positive groove.
Right. It's kind of like a printing press, right? Yeah. In that way. Yeah.
Very much so. So yeah, that's, you know, we'll show you the three-step process, but you go positive, negative, positive, negative, positive. A lot of work. So you can just see some of the stuff. We don't have too many of the fancy things up here, but we'll start putting some stuff back up.
Wall of colorful records.
Yeah, it is. Metallica.
I see that. Metallica on pink vinyl. That was unexpected.
Yep.
Yeah, that was for breast cancer awareness.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
That's cool.
Yeah, so we actually have a press in Germany that we built specifically for Metallica.
Did you really?
It's called the Metalla Press.
Wow.
So we press everything Metallica in the world, we press.
What?
Yep.
Even their beer?
That's all Metallica. That was like from the Injustice for All box set.
So they sell a lot of records.
It's nonstop. The press runs all the time.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Does Lars visit there?
He hasn't.
Oh.
It's odd because they're super into that stuff. So we'll get them out someday. So this thing is a, this is what punches the center out of the record.
Okay.
So you stack a bunch of records. It punches a hole. You can't mix the paper in with the plastic. Otherwise you get some pretty bad sounding records. So that's what this does. And you know, you stack them up, punches it out one by one. And then those things you just dump into that granulator.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then from the granulator, we've got a dust extractor that takes out all the fines.
Mm-hmm.
So you get
is
all
this
the
low man on the totem pole job?
Yes.
Like this is where you start
this
if you want to learn
the
business?
This is where you come when you get in trouble. Yeah.
Are you hiring?
Super loud. Super
I can
loud.
Start here. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the job I can do. Actually. Show you the QC room. So every record that we press gets looked at. And some of them get, every 50 records or so gets listened to.
Every single record you press gets looked at.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you have to look at them. So basically what happens is we have a spindle and all of this stuff gets coded into our database. But so you have 60 records on a spindle. And then what we do is we take them and we mark down in our system. We keep track of, like, you know, in the spindle, which, you know, what problems do we have? Do we have stitching, non-fill? Was there scratches? Was there any problem with the way that the, you know, etch versus the label? Were there any mixed up things? So we go through and then we keep track. And then that way we can go and look at, you know, how many rejects that we had by operator, by press, by PVC.
Oh, I see.
And we can kind of keep metrics based on all that stuff. So we can then go and pull that and say, you know, do we need to retrain? Do we need to, you know, talk to our PVC supplier? Do we have to work on a press?
Mm-hmm.
So we can kind of, you know, get pretty granular with the metrics and make sure that, you know, we're not chasing our tail, but we can actually like put some thought into, you know, logical thought into like what is making a good record or where are we having some struggles. So
at what point does the etching in that dead wax take place? Is that when
happens,
you make the plate?
That's actually when you cut the record. So
the
cutting engineer will put in the catalog number and then they'll sometimes scribe their name if they're proud of what they do.
Oh, absolutely.
They'll put their little signature. So I don't know who cut this one, but...
Well, as a hardcore collector, that can often be the final definitive identification, you know, of a certain pressing.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
For sure. I mean, back in the old days, you know, when let's say Fleetwood Mac Rumors came out, you know, that was probably pressing at 14 plants across the country.
Yeah, exactly.
So you'd have different people cutting it, different people plating it, you know, different plants pressing it. So even back then, you know, audiophiles knew that, you know, you'd want to buy, you know, if someone was being pressed at Wakefield or one of these other plants,
right.
Like you'd buy those and you'd stay away from other ones. So,
right. The Jacksonville pressing or the Winchester. I mean, they pressed a lot of Beatles records in Winchester because Capitol had a massive
plant. Yeah, that was the Capitol plant, which is an hour away. We were for years trying to find those presses. We thought they might be in a shed somewhere, but
never found out what happened to
them. Never find anyone that worked there or where the equipment was. Yeah, but yeah,
they just shut it down one day, which is kind of bizarre.
So we've got this this little microscope, so we can look and make sure, you know, if there is a problem, we can look at it, and we can also tell how centered a project or you know each record is by looking at the groove, the inside grooves. Yeah. So this is how we assemble a record. We used to we used to do it all on tables. Now we flow rack everything down. It's kind of like our lean manufacturing stuff. So this way people, they can, all they have to do is assemble, shoot it down there. There's little counters there, and it goes into our database as to like how fast we're assembling things. So record, insert, download card. You know, this can get super complex or super lean depending on what the title is. So,
do you shrink wrap here?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So you can see that this stage is where unboxing all the jackets that can't come in. We put everything, marry it up with the vinyl. Everything gets assembled. They get put on these skateboards. And then we put it over here at the mouth of the shrink wrapper. So you have two shrink wrap, and then we have a bagging line because some people don't like shrink wrap. And so we have these cool poly bags.
Oh, really? Okay.
So you put the jacket in. They have a little perforation on the top.
I've seen those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so these go through, gets put down here. A little seal cuts off the top and then goes through and do the same thing. Count it, box it. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's all.
That's it.
All.
So this is what we did today. This is
cage
all
the elephant.
Cage the elephant. So this is all cage the elephant.
Right. Social here. Cues. 1,125. That's amazing.
Cool. Well, thanks for showing all
that's amazing. Sure.
This
is amazing. Go through that once more, real quick.
Yeah. One more time. Don't you ever, baby, no sis trying to change it. I'm gonna strike these matches, never had control.
Okay, that was something, Patrick. You remember that day?
I do.
That was a fun day.
Yeah, really brought back a lot of great memories. It was super fun and great to you know, be able to spend that time and just learn about it. I mean, when you have to have a full-time, like, steam fitter on your team to keep your place running, and this guy, you know, as you heard, was no, like, apprentice doing his first job. This is like a master, you know, steam fitter to keep this place running, because every minute, every hour equates to production time. They can't have any downtime. They got to keep those things running as much as possible. So it was really, really fascinating to just see all the hardware and those beautiful machines that actually do the pressing. It's really cool. And I think I told you when we were getting this ready, my eyes and brain kind of glazed over when I saw the colored vinyl. And that was kind of it for me. I blanked out at that point.
I just think it's so cool to see that, like, the virgin vinyl, as they call it, the PVC, is just
amazing.
Little pellets. It's just little pellets. You know, that's how it starts. And then it gets formed into these, he called them pucks. They really do look like hockey pucks.
Yeah.
And then those get flattened into the vinyl record. It's really, it's quite amazing. You don't, you know, I don't know. I'm sure some people think about these things, but I don't really sit around and contemplate what was the origin of this piece of material that I put on the record. Mm-hmm. Like, I think much more about what's on the record, the music and how that was produced, and not so much the actual physical product. But we do love the physical product, and we should, you know, kind of appreciate how complex it is to make this work. And also, I could sort of get a sense of that, like the materials and how they're put together. I still, even though he explained it to me, don't really understand how the actual music itself gets in there.
No.
But I'm just going to leave that to magic, as we described.
Well, he gave us some posters and information on it, too. And even when you read it, it's like, where's the magic? At some point, magic happens, you know?
Yeah. All right, cool. So tomorrow we have an interview, sit-down interview with Eric. And and it's really fun because he talks a lot about how he even got into this in the first place and grew this business, right? So it's cool.
Totally cool.
It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Like, we may not be the largest plant, but we will be the last plant.